earth, and sky.
I firmly believe in the power of, you know, the human spirit and human cooperation to figure out in a rational way how to regulate and control and manage these incredible new possibilities to society's benefit.
That was Caltech researcher Michael Rukas, and you are listening to Earth Skies, Clear Voices for Science podcast. Dr. Rukas started as a physicist, but says he's now dealing with less esoteric questions than before. That's because Rukas works in nanotechnology, whose future, he says, is in practical applications for biology and medicine. Rukas is one of a panel of experts in a new Fred Friendly Seminars series about nanotechnology being broadcast on public television stations beginning in April 2008. The series title is Nanotechnology, the Power of Small.
The recent Fred Friendly Seminars that you participated in, what are some things that that you just didn't get a chance to say that you wish you had?
The immense possibilities, transformational possibilities in medicine were brought up that can happen as a consequence of this technology that's just emerging. The point that I wanted to make at the end is that we shouldn't be afraid of the technologies. We should certainly have our eyes opened and discuss. But these things take decades to be adopted.
One of the things to possibly expect in not too long is the ability to monitor in real time conditions going on in your body, whether it's related to various disorders, diseases that you have, and be able to get that information right away. And I think you mentioned basically the coffee cup doctor.
The picture that I had, you know, when I mentioned you would, in the morning when you got your cup of coffee, you would do something that would allow your physiological state for that day to be mapped out, and you would have the information of, you know, what kind of vitamins you might need to take, or you're coming down with a cold or something more serious, in fact. You know, what I was thinking was not so much that it was going to be some sort of hot-wired coffee cup, but that, you know, maybe you would put your finger on a little pad and it would take a little prick. And that was in response to some deep fears that were expressed by, you know, other panel members about implants, right? This kind of fear that people would implant these kind of sensors and you would have no control over the implanted sensors. And so I wanted to counter with, you know, there's no reason why we can't actually get the information externally, and then it would be more participatory.
Yeah, in looking at the at what's possible to do with some of this technology, nanotechnology, this is the cutting edge combination of all kinds of different fields out there of science. In looking at these possibilities, do you draw a line anywhere? And you go where you say, we will not go there. does that ever cross your mind?
Yeah, well, it does, but not in the context that I think you're raising it. One of the inspirational talks that really, you know, one could say would mark the beginning of these concepts in the field was this famous talk that Richard Feynman, a Nobel Prize winning theoretical physicist at Caltech, gave about 50 years ago, you know, it'd be 50 years ago, I guess, in December. And he said he didn't see any fundamental physical reasons why machines and things could be made very small, even down to the atomic dimensions. And that's where I draw a line, that we can extrapolate based on what we know to be true as physicists, as physical scientists and engineers, and what is achievable barring some new development or some new level of understanding that we have. The other context of drawing the line is, are there places in scientific discovery we should just not go because we're afraid that we might not be able to handle the technology that's created? And this is where I really have fundamental disagreement with the people that want to put brakes on scientific inquiry and development. We certainly have to be rational about what we do, but there's an inevitability about the progress of science that it's going to happen. And if it doesn't happen, you know, in the context of rational discussion and developed and countries where there are strong, you know, democratic mechanisms for dialogue and regulation, then it's going to happen in very uncontrolled ways that could be adverse. So that's number one. And number two is that, you know, we haven't ended our species yet, despite proclamations that it's inevitable because of this new technology or that new technology. And I really believe that attests to the fundamental strength and wonder of the human spirit, that that as a species, we do have this drive to preserve ourselves. And we will rationally think about where we're going in terms of the ethical, moral, environmental implications of the technology that we're embracing. And I believe we will self-correct.
I was a bit inspired in listening to you talk about how, like, let's go back to the idea that nanotechnology will help us not only guide our medical histories, but our medical futures, and to help us manage our health ourselves.
One of the panelists, he kept bringing us back to the point that there's this huge disparity in longevity between third world countries and first world countries, and pointed out that that's really the big challenge that we should keep focused on at the beginning, rather than, you know, the enhancement of the privileged few to having longevities that were 150 or 200 years, as mentioned in the program. And I strongly agree with that. I think that the most profound transformative potential that this technology has is to basically democratize modern medicine in two senses. The first is in terms of global distribution, that this technology, this will enable point-of-care technology rather than the medical laboratory sort of model that we currently have for medical diagnostics. And that centralized laboratory concept doesn't work very well or at all in the third world, because, you know, essentially you need at the point of care to make the diagnosis and give the palliative before the patient disappears, never to be seen again. You know, if you say, come back in 2 weeks after you have the results, well, you know, that doesn't happen, right? So you need point of care, real-time, basically, diagnostics and palliative care. The second way that I wanted to mention that, you know, this information or this technology will democratize healthcare is that, you know, right now we have this centralized medical establishment, you know, which is wonderful and has prolonged our, you know, our lives and enhanced our lives. But really the power of the information, people's medical records and history, and even the interpretation of what's going on, one has to say it's largely not in people's hands. And, you know, the internet has really opened our eyes to what's possible in terms of, you know, modern information transfer and how the world of information can be at your fingertips when you sit at your computer and you use Wikipedia or Google or something like that. I mean, I expect to see, certainly within my lifetime, the same sort of information explosion about my own real-time sort of medical state become available to me, and I will become much more informed about, you know, what I can do to improve my health and improve my longevity.
That was Michael Rukes of Caltech. This special Clear Voices for Science podcast was produced in cooperation with ICANN Productions and the Fred Friendly Seminars, with funding from the Department of Energy and the National Science Foundation. You'll find more about the televised panel discussions on nanotechnology at www.powerofsmall.org. This is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science podcast.
We're at earthsky.org.